This week on Potlatch, a report on the Self-Determination Act, President Ford's position on Native American matters, Canadian land claims, and education in Arctic Quebec. Buffy St. Marie. And now a report, the first of two, from Lynn Engels of the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
54 members of the Trail of Self-Determination were arrested and charged with disorderly conduct in Washington, D.C. According to Deputy Undersecretary of Interior Dennis Ickes, the incident occurred after a group of Indian people from the trail group assembled at the building asking for a tour of the facility. They were told that while public tours of the building normally were not offered, they would be allowed to tour the building in groups of five. The group rejected this offer. Following the rejection of the offer, the employees of the building were sent home for the day. The group was not allowed to tour the building en masse, Ickes said, because in 1972, a group at that time used a similar pretense to take over the same building, and the resulting damage to the building and its contents was assessed at more than $2 million. Three windows were broken during the incident, but none of the demonstrators or the police were injured. When security guards decided to clear the area and close the building, the group was told it would be given 10 minutes to leave the parking lot. When they refused to leave, the arrests followed. Ickes and other representatives of the Department of Interior and the White House met with leaders of the Trail of Self-Determination group the next day to discuss grievances the group brought to Washington to present to the White House and to Congress. The group had been following one of the bicentennial wagon trains to the nation's capital and had begun its trip in Washington State some months earlier. Recently, La Follette Butler, assistant to the Phoenix area director, spoke to the Indian Law Seminar in Phoenix. The subject of Butler's talk was Indian self-determination. He told the group, and these are his words, "If Indian self-determination and self-government is to succeed, lawyers and bureaucrats must stop knowing too much." Butler said that the Indian tribes must be allowed to pursue their own destiny. "No matter what legal tools or mechanisms are placed in Indian hands," Butler said, "tribes never will achieve self-government or self-determination until they assume they can determine and govern. And lawyers, bureaucrats, and other experts assume the same thing." The BIA official said attorneys and bureaucrats have a responsibility to try, and they should offer the best advice available concerning something the tribes have decided to do. In Butler's words, "But it should be something they decided and not something you decided for them." He continued, "It is one thing to negotiate a position with a tribe, and another thing to use our approval power to bludgeon a tribe into accepting our view of the universe. He said there was a time in history when tribes truly were self-governing, and they managed it without the BIA and lawyers. Butler said the Indian Self-Determination Act, passed by Congress, should be regarded as a process, not as an end. He said, again these are his words, self-determination does not come about through events such as wringing declarations from Congress. Self-determination is a process which we must understand and which we must be willing to allow to function. My plea, Butler said, is for us not to know too much, but to find that thin line between carrying out our legal responsibilities and allowing the progression of the process of self-determination by letting the tribes be deciders of their destiny.
On the park bench I slept on, raindrops were falling on the newspapers covering me. I hear early morning motors, and I know the world is waking for the dawn. But my mind's down a dark alley, somewhere where last night you loved me. And in the early morning chill, my arms remember still, but I'm dropping like a stone, lonesome to the bone. The sun is roughly rising on the roofs of Stagtown. The time for sweating poison out is just now coming round. The high time of last midnight is over with and gone, leaving me to be lonesome to the bone. I walk the way the wind blows, and any way the wind goes will be good enough for me. The streets are loud and crowded, but I walk my weary way lost and alone. Your hot breath and your laughter keep flashing through my mind to warm me. But the naked light of day soon makes it fade away, and I'm dropping like a stone, lonesome to the bone. The sun is roughly rising on the roofs of Stagtown. The time for sweating poison out is just now coming round. The high time of last midnight is over with and gone, leaving me to be lonesome to the bone.
Johnny Cash. Adami Inukpuk and Noah Inukpuk are not related, but they are the president and vice president of the Kativik School Board in northern Quebec, and both participated in the Cross-Cultural Education in the Far North conference recently. The University of Alaska Center for Northern Educational Research sponsored the conference, held October 5th through the 8th. At that conference, I asked Noah Inukpuk if there was a native land claims movement in Arctic Quebec.
Yes, there's a land claim going on for 4 years now, but the agreement has been passed. It says in agreement that the above 55th parallel, the Inuit people will be responsible for this land, and they're going to have their own local governments in each community and the original government above that 55th parallel.
How much land are we talking about?
Well, it's over 290,000 square miles, about there, approximately.
Is there any cash settlement also?
There is. This $150 million is divided to two groups. There's Cree Indians in James Bay area, and the half of that goes to northern Quebec. That $150 million will be used for to have those the projects going on. I mean, to start the corporations and in the settlements, and this money will be used for to start many big projects in the communities.
Atami Inukpuk, if native people in his area, Arc de Quebec, have any control over what is being taught in their schools.
Tigumiak tangkinya right, tigumiak sungit tak kononga 14 inyut nunal inyut atau langat luit, tama ko tigubur liya langat laut mana pangnai join durang ina laut ammalo, right cuma pangnai cium mukut hati kini tama na ang hati kini mengal tau sem ang hati kini ilu aguk tilu tama ko hisang ne ilu nadi tigubiak langat laut.
The school board is one large group, one large the school board. This school board makes a budget for the whole 14 communities and divide the money for the 14 communities. So this is how they operate in the school.
Are there courses in school for native culture, native history, and maybe native values?
There is a group of people that is preparing those programs. This group of people are called Tikit, and they're the ones that are preparing the cultures, books, and all that for the students to learn about their cultures.
I asked if students go to high school in their own areas or far away, and I got this reply from Noah Inukpuk.
Well, the high school students usually have to go to southern Canada to learn to receive their high school certificates in university. There's no high school in North, and they have to go Ottawa or Montreal to study.
Even high school?
Even high school.
Are there any changes made, or are you people demanding that schools be built in your high schools be built in your area?
Well, we had a plan to build the high school in the North, but we're just starting off, so we don't know when. The high school will come.
Are students trained to live in an urban situation, or are they trained for subsistence hunting and subsistence living, or both?
Well, they taught them how to hunt, or it's a culture in general that they learn.
Their own culture.
Yeah, their own culture.
Do you think the government is doing enough? Is it flexible enough to provide the education needs of the people in your area?
Well, I say that the government is not really not trying to give enough money to provide the culture programs in the North. And we always had a great big problem with the government to ask for a budget in order to run those cultures. There's a big problem with this in our country.
Are there enough native teachers in the schools, in your opinion?
Well, there's not enough in native teachers, but we're looking more forward to have more native teachers.
Any closing comments from Adami and then from you?
Inuit namanya pium na sibali na ruk tangani sibun chali oso taking wat chatni tamaduminga sibun hachia hoi chuda sibuning ana khajam chedu mi hoi chuda daga pang nai chu indurang na ta ilangin ni tigum yang na ilang rabut ang hatike ni ilwan itok taman na sitin lai nga sibuli pami piyau semalok mat amalo atun nyok ta jawlong mat daga pang nai chu mariuta tamak ko inuit pium na sibali na nyak tangi tamachan king wat sata chan isuk siya ho lang at amal tungan na siya ho lang at tamatuminga.
Thinking about the future, we're now planning to take over the education in Northern Quebec, so that because thinking about our future, our children, we're trying to study very clearly, and we're not trying to take over the schools right away, but we would like to first study the educations. How we will run this education in Northern Quebec, so for that he have to say that we're just trying to study hard now. How we going to run our school in Northern Quebec? We're just starting off with this new program.
talk to that one of mine. Hey, that train and capital from town.
Music of Doc Watson. Now another report from Lynn Engels of the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Some 200 Indian leaders from throughout the United States traveled to Washington, D.C. recently to attend a White House briefing session and to hear remarks from President Gerald Ford. Among government officials attending the briefing session were Commissioner of Indian Affairs Morris Thompson, Secretary of the Interior Thomas Kleppe, Dr. Emory Johnson of Indian Health Service, and representatives of the Departments of Health, Education and Welfare, Commerce, Housing and Urban Development, Labor, and Justice. The President, speaking to the Indian leaders in the East Room of the White House, asked them for their input so that the federal government could be more responsive to their needs.
I think it's vitally important that you tell us what your problems are, what your needs are, and then we can be fully informed as to the right policies and the right programs.
The President also spoke of the present policy of self-determination for Indian tribes and his administration's opposition to any policy of termination.
The 1970s have brought a new era in Indian affairs. In the last century, federal policy has vacillated between paternalism and the threat of terminating federal responsibility. I'm opposed to both extremes. I believe in maintaining a stable policy so that Indians and Indian leaders can plan and work confidently for the future. I am committed to furthering the self-determination of Indian communities, but without terminating the special relationship between the federal government and the Indian people. I'm strongly opposed to termination. Self-determination means that you can decide the nature of your tribe's relationship with the federal government within the framework of the Self-Determination Act, which I signed in January of 1975.
And the President addressed the issue of jurisdiction on Indian reservations, a problem which the Congress is looking into at the present time.
My administration is supporting the concept of allowing Indian tribes to determine whether they and their members, in addition to being under tribal jurisdiction, should be under state or federal civil and criminal jurisdiction. I have directed the Departments of Justice and Interior to draft legislation which would accomplish this goal efficiently, effectively, and within adequate guidelines. They have solicited the views of the Indian community in preparing their recommendations, which I will soon send to the Congress.
Following the briefing session and the President's remarks, some of the tribal leaders voiced their concern about not being able to question the participants in the briefing session. They felt they should have been allowed that opportunity. A memorandum prepared by an employee of the Office of Management and Budget, more commonly known as the Borgstrom Memo, has been circulating widely in Indian country. Since the memorandum sets forth some recommendations that disturb many people, Indian Network News asked Commissioner Morris Thompson whether the memo reflected administration or BIA policy.
The memo being circulated is an internal memorandum and is not the official position of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, of the department, or or Nora, the administration. It's one man's views on how Indian affairs could be operated. I want to reiterate that it is not the official position of the administration.
That was former Commissioner of Indian Affairs Morris Thompson.
Ira Hayes. Ira Hayes. Call him drunken Ira Hayes. He won't answer anymore. Not the whiskey drinking Indian nor the Marine that went to war. Gather round me, people, and the story I will tell about a brave young Indian you should remember well. From the tribe of Pima Indians, a proud and peaceful band who farmed the Phoenix Valley in Arizona land. Down their ditches for a thousand years that sparkling water rushed, till the white man stole the water rights and the running water hushed. Now Ira's folks were hungry and their farm grew crops of weeds. But when war came, he volunteered and forgot the white man's greed. Call him drunken Ira Hayes, he won't answer anymore. Not the whiskey drinking Indian or the Marine that went to war. Well, they started up Iwo Jima Hill, 250 men. But only 27 lived to walk back down again. And when that fight was over, and Old Glory raced, among the men who held it high was the Indian Ira Hayes. Call him drunken Ira Hayes, he won't answer anymore. Not the whiskey-drinking Indian nor the Marine that went to war. Ira Hayes returned a hero, celebrated through this land. He was wined and speeched and honored, and everybody shook his hand. But he was just a Pima Indian, no water, no crops, no chance. At home nobody cared what Ira'd done, and when do the Indians dance? Call him drunken Ira Hayes, he won't answer anymore. Not the whiskey drinking Indian nor the Marine that went to war. Then Ira started drinking hard, jail often was his home. They let him raise the flag there and lower it as you'd throw a dog a bone. He died drunk early one morning alone in this land he'd fought to save. 2 inches of water in a lonely ditch was the grave for Ira Hayes. Call him drunken Ira Hayes, he won't answer anymore. Not the whiskey drinking Indian nor the Marine that went to war. Yes, call him drunken Ira Hayes, but his lands, they're still as dry. And his ghost, it's a lion thirsty in the ditch where Ira died.
That was Peter LaFarge. And that about wraps up another segment of Potlatch. We remind our listeners that at the end of June of 1977, we will run out of funding for Potlatch. We're looking into getting more funds. But whether we do or not, it's going to depend on you, our listeners. Do you like Potlatch? Do you think it's worth spending the taxpayers' money, your money, to continue the program? Can we improve it? We'd like to hear from you. You can write to us at KUAC, the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. We'd like to hear from you, pro or con. This is Jeff Kennedy. Thanks for listening. Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.